Hello, I'm Mark Kate. This is Why We Listen. For each episode, I ask my guests to choose three songs, whatever they choose for whatever reason, to listen to and discuss. In this episode, I sit with Jill Tracy. She is a songwriter and performer who creates an elaborate and dark world with her music. I hope she'll forgive me for repeating this, but it's a great quote. When we were hanging out, she told me that she was once referred to as the Oprah for the underworld. I think that's mostly just funny, but it's actually true enough that it's worth repeating. We listened to Don't Leave Me Now by Pink Floyd, Intruder by Peter Gabriel, and Night Porter by Japan. I think that the idea of escape in music is really interesting. Not as a subject in a song's lyrics, but music as a means of escape. When we talk about escaping into music, there's this assumption that life is too much and we need to escape from it, that reality is too harsh and music can provide a way out. I've spoken before about, actually in the last episode, about how music in the Western world has become more of a texture, more of a ubiquitous background and soundtrack for our lives, while these unyielding playlists issue audio content out into the world. I think the only sane reaction is to either cut oneself off as best as possible or go on an audio diet. Mike Norris, aka Fort Rameau, wrote an interesting article about this recently for Fact, endorsing a listening practice akin to the slow food movement. Something I've witnessed over the last 10 years or so is that nightclubs have gone from these places to disappear on the dance floor to good places to exchange business cards and take pictures of your friends and maintain some sort of social networking status. Again, the music is just a background, an accessory. So, amidst this texture of background music, I wonder how much this escaping into music is possible. Music only works that way if you give yourself over to it. What's also interesting about music as escape is when it's music that is darker than the reality we're ostensibly escaping from, like with blues or metal or goth. It seems not necessarily escape then, is it? It's more like solace. It's less escape than a reminder that we are not alone.
I remember watching an old Twilight Zone episode. And to this day, Rod Serling in the Twilight Zone was such an influence on me and everything that I do in my life. And I was watching this episode, and there was a scene of a guy sitting in a roadside cafe. And there's nothing scary about it, but I just couldn't take my eyes off the screen, and it was terrifying to me. And then an adult walked into the room, and they turned the sound down on the TV, and I was in trouble for something or other. And then I looked at the screen, and all of a sudden it wasn't scary anymore, and I didn't feel that way. But I didn't know why, you know, like, okay. And then the adult walked out of the room. Well, then I turned the sound back up again, and then all those feelings came flooding back, and I was afraid, and something horrible was going to happen to this man, and I didn't know what. And then that's when I realized it's the music that is conjuring all of this. Like, that holds the key. And so I became obsessed, and I would, like, turn the sound down on the TV and try to play music. And how do you do that? I didn't know anything about the piano at the time. And we had this old piano, and I just play it. And I just wanted to figure out, like, how do I create this place to go to and these other worlds? And that is what I still do. I devoted my life to that because it's become a saving grace for me. I really know I wouldn't be alive today if I had not found this way to get to another place and get out of the dreary, dismal, everyday world and inhabit this other place that I create. And my greatest gift to people is to bring them with me and say, okay, here's this other place that you can go. It's great. So it's such a powerful thing when you can create something and just remove someone from what's bothering them, what's caging them, and say, okay, you know, we're going to go here for a while. And when you can do that live with an audience, that's the greatest thing of all. This particular song, when I heard it, it just takes you to that place, you know, and I heard it as a kid. And one thing that all these songs that we'll listen to today have, which is so important to me, is they allow that space. There's space in the arrangement for you to kind of hide in and lurk in. And that's where I think the real feeling happens. And I always say to people, the soul lives in the silence.
Trudeau.
Well, I think one thing that's really fascinating about it is there's such this difference between all the songs on that record where, you know, like Biko, which is a very, very political song. Games Without Frontiers. Yeah.
Very anthemic.
Games Without Frontiers, yeah. Also really anthemic, yeah. Very political, but yeah. Pretty playful despite how very bizarre it is. But side one has all these songs like Intruder that are really dark, really deep, deeply in the mind of someone who's really disturbed. And he really goes the distance with it. Like, it's not just about someone who's into breaking and entering. He's really deeply in that person.
And when I first heard this song, it just exemplified just everything that I was feeling and wanted to do. Not to be an intruder per se, but just the space. And then there are these harsh chords that come in, and the textures, and the drums are big but just open. So it just is this visceral kind of beat. And then this vocal comes in, and it's just very sensual and soft, but it creaks and it just takes you in there. It's so alluring. It's disturbing, but it's gorgeous. I mean, in the work that Peter Gabriel did, the early Genesis, beautiful, beautiful work. I think it's so overlooked. People don't even really know about it today, which is so sad. Long before Phil Collins, who is a fabulous drummer, but I prefer, you know, Peter Gabriel's singing. And then also before Peter Gabriel, as we were talking, back when this song came out, it was about the song, the experience, bringing you into it. It wasn't about radio airplay or writing a hit song, which yes. Later, you know, Peter Gabriel went into that, more of that, because you had to if you were on a record label. It was just the industry changed where it was more about the song and commodifying everything. But Intruder definitely is about the experience.
Okay. Well, it's interesting that movement between creating something that is just sort of this art piece in and of itself and not necessarily very market-minded, and talking about Phil Collins and the trajectory of early Genesis, which most people don't really think about, to the institutions that are Peter Gabriel and Phil Collins, because, you know, Phil Collins played drums on that song, on Intruder, and that was the first time he had used that really intense, gated drum sound with all the toms, which became his signature sound. And, you know, he used on In the Air Tonight, which was sort of, you know, became his calling card in a way. And it was this really dark, messed up song
In the Air Tonight is a fantastic song. I mean, it's very similar. It's you're in the mind of this. I think it's a little more glossy just because of where production went at that time. With all of these things, like, I like the production back then because it was not so slick. It was just keeping more of that fuzz, that edge that gives it more of an emotional quality. And then things weren't, you know, what I hate about pop music today, many things that I hate, but the fact that everything is so compressed and it's so dense, it's so crunched that you're not able to get into the cracks and just really hear the arrangement and be part of it. It's just blaring in your face and it's loud and there's no dynamics, and so therefore they're trying to make it so loud to have an impact, but it doesn't. It almost is the opposite, where it's just screaming at you to the point that you just ignore it. Yeah. And
as opposed to Peter Gabriel kind of whispering something creepy in your ear is kind of unforgettable.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
could I ever explain this feeling of love? It just lingers on. The fear in my heart that keeps telling me which way to turn.
as I listen to Night Porter, it's so perfect the way it is. Like it's a waltz, you know, but there are no drums, and I'm sitting here thinking that drums would ruin it, you know, like the waltz is implied and it's so floaty and ethereal, and I think that's its power. Like I'm sitting here thinking it doesn't need anything else. And discovering Japan was a huge thing when I did, as I'm sure with you as well. And sadly, they don't get their due, you know. But when I discovered Japan, that was such a huge impact on my life. And it was, Is it from this album?
Tin Drum? Or is this...
This is from Gentlemen Take Polaroids. I think Tin Drum was the first album. I remember hearing Ghosts from Tin Drum. It was the first Japan song I ever heard. It's like, oh my God, what is this?
And there's no drums on that one either.
No drums.
Percussion, but no drums.
So elegant. Yeah. And then so people often ask me vocally, you know, who are my influences, and they expect it to be like some female singer, and it's not at all. It was the men. It was the David Sylvian, the David Bowie, Robert Smith of The Cure. It was just these very painful, low voices, and that interjected such emotion. It was, you know, Pink Floyd, and it was all about just the emotion that was in the voice. It wasn't so much that it was a perfect voice, because we listened to that performance and it isn't the perfect voice, but it conjures exactly what it needs to, and therefore it couldn't be any better.
Did you see Japan live, or you saw David Sylvian play live?
I've seen David Sylvian a couple of times, but it was at the Zellerbach that
I was there.
And wasn't the sound amazing?
It was incredible.
That was me crying during the song.
The most memorable moment of that whole evening for me was in the middle of his song Orpheus. There's this long period of silence right in the middle of the song, and the Zellerbach Hall, I mean, it was packed, but it was packed with like goths and punks, and I just remember right in the middle of the song, dead silence, no one clapped, no one thought the song was over, no one was talking, no one was even whispering, it was just dead silence. Everyone knew that, everyone knew where that was placed, like you were at the opera and everybody knows, oh, the song's over, but you don't clap yet, you clap after the next piece. And that everybody was so quiet and respectful of this, and so reverential, it almost seemed, of David Sylvian, that they didn't want to ruin that moment for each other, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was like so much respect. And then, you know, as an artist, the fans, the audience are right there with you. And it's a sincere thing, which sadly doesn't exist as much today. Because it's all this flavor of the month, and you know, people like something and they don't like it, and then the industry pushes it down your throat and then it's over. But then for artists, and myself included, that you're doing this niche and you're owning that, and it's like, this is what I do, and you're drawing people that are kindred spirits that appreciate that and love it. So yeah, when they come to a show, it is reverential, and it's a beautiful thing that I think the industry has kind of ruined. So it's good that the artists, we're sort of taking that back. We're taking back the reins, and we're creating that for ourselves again. Because isn't that what it's all about? I mean, I'm not making widgets here on an assembly line. This is, you know, something that's coming from a very emotional place. And I do get letters from people that have said that the music has helped them through hard parts in their life, and which means so much to me, because you know, music that I'm playing with for you today, like, it has helped me through moments in my life, or these particular artists and things. So if I can do that for someone else, and I've received a few letters from people that were like going to commit suicide or going through, you know, a certain time in their life, and a particular song had helped them. I had a very dear friend commit suicide to the wall. Do we want to talk about this?
If you like.
So I'm going to see the wall tomorrow. So I think that's why I was like, I've been listening to it, because I haven't heard it, really just sat and listened to it for a while. And I had a friend, a close friend in high school that hung himself from the bedroom closet with a chain. And at the time, like, we were just, we'd always get together and listen to Pink Floyd and The Lights Out and drinking and, you know, listening to The Wall. And then when I heard, I heard certainly after the fact that he had hung himself to side three of The Wall. And I was thinking about that the other day, that doesn't exist anymore. Because back then, you know, he had the vinyl, the two record set and the beautiful artwork, the Gerald scarf. And they walked in and the turntable was, you know, the needle had gone to the end and it was making that sound of, you know, side three and the quiet. And there's something so profound about just that. That's what he wanted. That's what he did. And there is no side three anymore, you know. And I was thinking about how that does change the scene, that if you're going to commit suicide. I mean, it sounds so morbid, but I know that's what he would have wanted. So if you got to get a vinyl if you're going to create. We were talking about Ian Curtis.
Yeah, too. That's how he was found.
Yeah. Because what would be the option today was if you're listening on your iTunes, it would be keep going. Repeat, you know, yeah. they're going to be at Xavier Cugat by the time, you know, somebody finds you. And then it's going to be a very different scenario. And that person is going to be mad. You know, so, yeah, so there was another benefit. There are many, but another benefit to vinyl to make the suicide have more impact. Oh my God, I can't believe we're talking about this. But our audience will appreciate that. I think they will know.
Well, it's such. I mean, the album is, of course, it's so epic. And it also has a lot of really great songs, but it's also so marked, and this is really obvious, but it's so marked by such an aggressive, unfiltered outpouring of pain from Roger Waters, you know, a few exceptions like Comfortably Numb, which he didn't write, but it's still pretty much about a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that sort of like the biggest hit from that album was, you know, this, a bunch of children chanting this nonsense about school, but.
And who never got paid and later sued.
I didn't know that.
So yeah, the little children, they were brought into the studio and they made this great song and they were
poor kids.
Later sued. So you die a little bit after you hear that song. I mean, it's just pure emotion. It's so disturbing, but so beautiful, just to allow yourself to go to that place. And I think that's such the power of music, and certainly music that lets you peel away the comfort zone and kind of go into this very dark, dreaded place that most of us are afraid, but we're all there. Like, we all feel the pain, and that's such a universal thing that we all are there, but music kind of gives you that outlet to have someone to accompany you. And that's really, really a powerful piece. And again, just didn't take much. I mean, that's the brilliance of that piece for me. Is, yeah, again, no drums until things kick in. When the thing kicks in, I mean, it's just swoon-worthy. It's just like, oh my gosh, you know, it's just so over the top, because you've already been, you know, shackled into this sense that's where it's happening. But yeah, it's just very open, and there's that breath that's panned over to the right, like this kind of Darth Vader breath. And then there's this strange, almost carnival organ that's just, you know, playing these chords. And then all the delay and the guitars, like just the perfect amount of just letting that breath, that space happen. So you're just hanging in it. You're hanging in it. And I think that's what's so exciting about it.
I think it's also, what's also interesting about it is that it's this really pained place, and it pulls you into what he's going through, almost like you're being asked to sympathize with this person and the pain he's going through. But the deeper you go into the place he's in, there's nothing to sympathize with. He's awful.
He's awful.
You know.
Yeah,
So it's really interesting. You sort of get drawn into his pain until you realize
and
that you don't want. Like,
and you're
you don't
hearing the lyrics. You're hearing the lyrics. And I remember, when I first heard that as a kid, and it's like, oh, babe, you know, I need you. I need you to beat to a pulp on a Saturday night. And it really, you know, has this impact. You're like, oh my God, yeah, this person is so demented. And yeah, I don't have sympathy for him. But then yet you do feel, yeah, he's you know, he's at the end. He's at the end of his rope. And so that it's a great juxtapose too.
Yeah, it's similar. Similar to what's being done with Intruder, where there's really awful narrator.
Well, there's a reason they were chosen. But yeah, going into this disturbed, demented place, but then there's also beauty in that, because you are into their heads, and yeah, for a moment you're living it, and you're understanding, because there's a part of, I think, all of us that just sort of crave the diabolical, and we get it. We get it, and we appreciate it, whether we would care to admit that or not.
At what point did you come to realize that there's beauty in these dark moments?
Oh, always, always. That's just always what I loved. I mean, just like we mentioned the Twilight Zone before, and just reading, loving old classic horror movies and old film noir, and I just wanted to live in those worlds. I just wanted to, because I always have felt out of sorts in this world, and there's got to be some other place that's more meaningful. And then there's that the inner world, I call it, you know, just going to that place. And I've always embraced that. It's been kind of a blessing and a curse, you know, when you're a writer and starting out with it, it's people like, oh, this is too dark. This is too dark. It's off-putting. But then at the same time, people, it's almost like driving by a car accident, you know, you're not supposed to look, all this is terrible. But then at the same time, you're so intrigued and you want to see. And so we have that morbid curiosity and that sensibility. And I've chosen to just give it a voice and say, hey, this is part of the human condition. This is more than you think it is in your everyday life. We hide that, and there's so much of this superficial. People are like, how are you? And like, oh, well, I'm fine. And nobody's fine, come on. Nobody, there's no one that's fine.
You seem fine, you're in such a good mood.
Well, because I have the inner world. When you leave here, you don't know what happens, my dear. It's the piano and the tears and the wine comes out, and then we, you know, we have the ambience. So, but no, you do have to have that balance. You have to have that balance. And people get it any way they can. I mean, some people find that balance from playing video games, violent video games where they're killing people. And that's how they find the balance. I mean, you do have to have that dark and light balance. Some people find it through substance abuse, and the positive, the real way to find it is within yourself, that you have, that you don't need to look for external things, because that in the end, you don't want something that's defeating you. I think you don't want something that is depleting you of your power and energy. So you can't look externally, but you're looking internally. So I think just as a composer, as a writer, just finding these places and moods and things that I can create and relate to and give to someone else, don't you agree, rather than escaping. It's creating rather than and escaping into that, into this place that you know you're manifesting.
Thanks very much to Jill Tracy for talking with me. You can keep up with her work at jilltracy.com. And as a little addendum, she and I discussed a project that she is working on at the Mütter Museum in Philadelphia that didn't make it onto this episode, but can be found on her website. You can also find that conversation, past episodes of Why We Listen, and subscribe to the podcast at whywelisten.org or on iTunes. I'm Mark Kate. Thanks for listening.